Hello everyone, just a quick note before we start this weekend's episode. Today's show was recorded with Asma El Badawi while we were at the Mintridge Foundation training days back in December, so it's the last interview we have in the bank before the coronavirus lockdown came into effect. There's been unprecedented levels of change in a ridiculously short space of time. In our last episode, for example, we were talking to Aileen McIntyre about Tokyo 2020 and how much she was looking forward to it. But now the Olympics have been postponed for a year, along with several other huge sporting events, and we're all adjusting to this new reality that looks like it could be around for a while to come. Like a lot of people, we're also finding this a huge challenge in various different ways, but we're determined to keep this show going throughout. We also want to give people something that will help during this lockdown period that we find ourselves in. So that's what I'm here to ask you, the listeners and the people who follow us. If there is anything you want us to do, whether it's podcast content, written advice, articles, videos on social media, whatever it might be, that you would find beneficial, please get in touch and let us know. Our email address is sportspielpod@gmail.com. Podcasting is an amazing way of bringing our voices and the voices of our guests into rooms across the country, so it seems a bit foolish not to try and use that for some good. We already have a couple of ideas that we're working on at the moment behind the scenes, but we would obviously like to bring you a lot more. We are in this together, after all. So please stay safe, everyone. We're always open if people want to get in touch, and we'll keep trying to put a smile on sports fans' faces throughout the current situation. Now, on with this weekend's show. From a very young age, Asma El Badawi has always been someone to highlight any inequalities she saw. As it says on her Twitter bio, reframing stereotypes is part of who she is. To many people, she is the person who successfully campaigned for the International Basketball Federation to allow the hijab. As a player herself, she never wanted someone younger than her to say they couldn't compete in the sport because they weren't allowed to wear the hijab. If you take it back even further, to when she was younger, she never saw women, specifically Muslim women, in sport. As she says in this episode, that doesn't really have much to do with faith, it's more about the restrictions that were in place. It takes a lot for someone to recognise those issues, but it also takes a lot for someone to make a move and change them. That's what Asma did. Yet despite these game-changing moves, there is a lot more to Asma El Badawi's character than that. Asma, thanks so much for coming onto the podcast and having a chat with us today, because I know it's a very busy couple of days as well since we're up here in Witham on the Hill for the Mintridge training day. First off, I'll touch on day one, which was yesterday. And I know you as a group will kind of work through the mental health side of things as well. Were there any sort of big lessons that you learned from what you did yesterday? And has that mental health side of things ever had an impact on you? Or is it something you've seen firsthand?
I think it was a bit of an eye-opener to see that, like, other people, when they transition from playing sports to not, did actually get affected. Because I felt like, you know, there's different times in my life where I've not been able to play sports, and it just felt like I wasn't in a great place, or I wasn't my best self, and I didn't realize that had to do with the fact that I stopped playing sports until like years on. So then when I did go back to sport, it gave me that sort of like place to go to unravel my emotions.
Yeah, exactly.
Feelings or whatever it is I need to do. Yeah.
I mean, because you've stopped playing basketball now as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something you've had to deal with, sort of not having the sport side of things in your life anymore.
I've had to kind of deal with leaving basketball for quite a while, I think, because the last time I played properly, like, and very competitive, was probably, like, Bucks League. And like after that, it became even more difficult to play. And it, one of the reasons was obviously because of the band that was in place, but also just because when you leave education, you need to get a job, and like it's difficult for women to play at high levels and fund themselves. So I did find myself like having to reduce the amount of hours that I could play and like the kinds of teams that I could play for, and I think that affected me quite a lot, to be honest. But I finally just decided that like basketball isn't for me anymore. Like it was becoming harder and harder to play, and I needed something that had more than one training a week. That like if I had to go somewhere for work, I could still catch a training that week.
Yeah, exactly. And that probably means you're more at peace with it.
Yeah.
If you've spent that long out of love with it, if that's not too strong to say. On that note about sort of the women's sports side of things, because it's something I recall you saying on, I think it was a BBC video I saw, where you said growing up you never saw specifically Muslim women, but I suppose that you could throw that open to a lot of women in your sport, but in other sports as well.
Yeah.
Is it a bit like what you were talking about before, that there's all these other pressures that means we're stopped, we don't see women, and specifically Muslim women as well, in those sports? Are there other reasons to it as well?
I think for a very long time there was a lot of bans that were in place that meant that Muslim women could not compete, mainly because there were like rules that were created such a long time ago and they'd never been reviewed. So for people like myself, not seeing someone who wore a hijab playing, you know, in the Olympics when I was growing up, meant that like that felt like something that was unachievable. It also made me question my faith, and wonder if that had more to do with my faith, not allowing Muslim women to be able to play. And then speaking to my parents and stuff like that, I realized it had nothing to do with the faith, and it was more about the restrictions that were in place that meant these women were not able to progress. Because the thing is, for you to be on the TV, you need to progress through not just like national level, you need to, even before that, you need to be competing so that you can make those kind of teams. So obviously, like if the ban was in place, it meant even at a young age you couldn't compete and progress.
And the thing that you're probably most recognised for is the campaign for the FIBA Allow Hijab campaign. I mean, first off, what is it about you, the person, that means you're not content just to let things lie and you want to fight for a more change, or the right change?
Yeah, I think from a very young age I've always loved kind of talking about issues or like highlighting different inequalities. I studied photography and video at uni, and like a lot of my work was kind of around showcasing different issues and, well, social issues around the world. So when it came to sport, which is something that I already love so much, it just felt like a bit of a no-brainer. I didn't want someone younger than me to, you know, come to the basketball court one day and be told, actually, you can't compete because you've got a hijab on. And even though I think it was difficult for me as well, knowing that, okay, I'm going to be part of this campaign, but I'm not actually going to be able to play professionally. But I just felt like it's just a bit unfair of me to have the opportunity to make a change and not do
and
that.
And not take it, essentially. Yeah. I mean, it must be so rewarding to see the way that it paid off as well, and that it did prove successful in 2014 now.
It wasn't just me, of course. It was like a group effort. It was like Muslim girls around the world. So there was about 12 of us that actually did that together. And I don't think I could have changed it just by myself. It was a group effort in terms of everyone of us did their campaigning in their community, did the media interviews, etc., and kept, you know, shouting about this issue until we were heard and the ban was lifted.
In terms of the issue itself, do you think there's still sort of an ignorance surrounding attitudes to the hijab in society, I suppose, because a lot of people just, I presume, see it more, not so much as a religious thing, but just sort of as a garment, essentially, whereas from your point of view, it's obviously a lot more than that. Is there a lack of understanding about it?
I think a lot of people, firstly, don't know that there was a ban. And then when you do say it to them, it's kind of like, oh, why? Because they don't get it. But the hijab itself, I think it means different things to different women. So for some women, they're fine with taking it off to take part in a sport. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I think in other communities, for example, when I go to Sudan and I play in Sudan, I don't wear my hijab because I'm in an all-female environment. When I train in some places in in London, I used to not wear my hijab because it was all-female environments again. But so it's not necessarily, like, the issue is not, the hijab for me is like integral part of who I am. And that means, you know, if I'm going to university, for example, I'm going to be wearing it. If I want to play a sport, it's going to be on my head. And it's that thing of, like, part of my identity that, and also part of my faith. So I believe it's part of my faith. Some people might not feel like it's part of their faith. They might see it as something that's part of their culture. And to different people, they might want to take it off. For others, they don't. And it was, the campaign was more about for the people who are like me that don't want to take it off to still be able to play sports and not be excluded because of a belief that we have regarding our hijab.
Exactly, which does make sense. By the way.
Yeah.
What other barriers are there that sort of prevent Muslim women from getting involved in sport? Because I know, obviously, we've talked about the ban in basketball, but I imagine there's still bans in place in other sports as well that, again, other women are probably fighting to overturn in the same way you and your group did.
Well, football had a ban, but theirs was lifted in 2014. Boxing lifted theirs this year. I know running doesn't really seem to have a ban because I've seen women running in the Olympics way before the ban was lifted for basketball. And I think there was another sport, fencing. Obviously, we saw Ibtihaj a couple of years ago at the Olympics. So I think now we're in a time where, like, actually there's a lot more Muslim women who are playing sports. But the problem is, I think for the Muslim community, it's almost like we only have, like, these big role models that are making it to the Olympics. We don't really concentrate on, like, highlighting the sort of grassroots level players. And I think sometimes that's really important because when you show people, like, you know, you can play sports, it doesn't necessarily have to be like that you're playing for England kind of thing. You allow young girls to kind of want to take part and enjoy it. But at the moment, it's almost like the only way you can play is if you make it to the top.
Exactly. And yeah, there's always, a bit of disconnect if you are at the very top. And like you say, the grassroots side of things is so, so important.
Yeah.
I'll bring in the Mintrish side of things here as well, which is rather apt considering where we are. But how important then is sport for developing those kids, whether they're from a Muslim background or any kind of background? And I suppose you've seen that as well firsthand by your work as an ambassador for Mintrish as well, because it has such a powerful tool to do the world of good for people.
Yeah, I think when young people see different kinds of people who play sports, it opens their eyes to the possibilities. Especially that, like, for example, if you look around here, you'll see, like, within the Mintridge ambassadors, there's so many different kinds of sports. Like, there's judo, and then there's, like, basketball, of course.
Of course.
And then there's, like,
then you look around this room right now,
yeah,
there's so much.
There's shooting and, like, sailing. And, you know, like, for young kids, sometimes they have interests in one sport, but that's literally because that's the only sport they know. But when they get to meet people who are in complete different fields, like, that allows them to explore. And kids, by their nature, they're really inquisitive. They want to know, they want to try things. So when we come in and we kind of share our story in a way that inspires young people to kind of aspire to be similar to us.
Exactly. And one last question before I wrap up. How does it feel to kind of essentially be considered a pioneer in your sport, but also the added responsibility of being a role model as well? Because it must be daunting at times, but on the flip side, it must have so many positives as well.
Yeah. I think it's funny for me because, like, when I was at school, I was always in the art room and I was always in sports, in, like, PE. And I remember just always being told, like, you need to pay more attention to your sciences. because you're not going to have a future in arts and sports. And then there was another like teacher that kept trying to push me to be like a role model, and I just remember rejecting it and sort of being like, I just want to be myself. And like, ironically, like through being myself, I have now, like, thanks to God and everything, like, that I'm in a position now where I can influence young people. And to be honest, there is a lot of pressure sometimes, because it's almost like people expect you to be 100% perfect. They expect you to, you know, to adhere to like all the rules, you know, and be like a perfect Muslim or whatever. And I'm just like, no, we're actually just all humans. Like, we all make mistakes. And I think, especially through social media, there's a lot of pressure sometimes to kind of speak about issues that I feel like, it's not that they're not relevant to me, but they're just too big for me to understand. Like, I know sports and I know arts, and that's the stuff that I can talk about every day.
That's your expertise, yeah. Essentially.
So when I'm kind of then asked about things outside of that field, I do struggle. And so it's that thing of like, we put people in influencer positions and expect them to understand politics, understand like, you know, climate change, like all these different things. And it's like, I do care about all these different things, but you know, sometimes you have to pass the mic on to people who do actually understand those fields better.
Exactly. It's about being yourself, yeah. And ultimately being the best version of you as well.
Yeah.
But I'll wrap this up and say thank you so much for coming on ASMA. And I know there's another session for you to join in with later. It's going to be another packed day.
Yeah.
But a lot of important issues we've touched on. Yeah. Just a little bit, but I think something that people will take away from listening as well. So thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
A huge thanks to ASMA for taking some time to sit and chat with us on the show during the Mintridge Foundation training days. It was a frantic couple of days, so we're obviously very, very grateful. It's also another big thanks to the Mintridge Foundation for continuing to be a huge support to us. As mentioned at the start, it's a very strange time, but we hope to have a few things to bring to you soon that will hopefully help during the current situation. And we're also going to keep doing what we do anyway, and that's bringing you more and more in-depth feature interviews with some of our best athletes. If you like what you hear, please visit our social channels. That's on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram, and please get involved. Likewise, if you do want to get in touch with us, our email address is sportsbuildpod@gmail.com. Take care of yourself, everyone. Stay home, and we will be back with more podcasts very, very soon.